Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Coffee and Open Source, a place for us to learn, talk with some new friends, and learn about some really, really cool things along the way. I have coffee. Do you have coffee? Let's have a chat. All right. My guest today is Garrett Ewan Park. Gary, do you want to say hello? Introduce yourself.
Hey, thank you. My name's Garrett Ewan Park. I'm from Scotland. I am a open source contributor, and I work for a company called Chocolatey Software, where we are a Windows package manager. And I'm involved in quite a few open source projects, some of which we might talk about today. But yeah, that's me.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you, Gary, for being on the show and chatting with us. I know there's a lot of things we can talk about. You're very prolific in the open source space. If anybody follows Gary on Twitter or GitHub, like, it seems like he's always committing something. So hopefully we'll get some really good pieces of anecdotal, I guess, advice from him. I'd like to kind of, as you laugh, I think one of the things I'd like to start off with you is kind of how you got started, in tech in general. Like, you know, maybe when you were younger, you came across, maybe you got a computer when you were younger. Maybe it was when you started going to school. Like, do you remember a particular time when you came across tech and you're like, this is the thing that I want to do? Like, this is what I want.
So that's an interesting one. So, I mean, I was quite late to the whole computer scene, to the programming scene. I got to it late. My first computer, my dad brought home a Commodore 64 from one of his work colleagues. This was back when I was maybe 8 or 9. But at the time, I didn't know what a computer was. I thought it was for playing games. So I played Dizzy on that Commodore 64 until I was, I played it a lot. But I didn't actually use it as a programming device because I didn't realize that's what it was. And at school, I was good at maths and physics, so I sort of fell into what was engineering. So that's what I went to university for. It was engineering, electrical and electronic engineering. And then it wasn't until at university that I started using computers. And then I was programming a PLC for one of my thesis dissertation, and I got into what was ladder logic at the time on the PLCs. And then from there, with my transition into my first job at a university, I started picking up ASP.NET and VB6, of all things.
Yeah.
And then from there, it kind of progressed from there. So I then transitioned jobs, where it was more of a dedicated programming role. And from there, it's kind of grown from that. And then when I was, when I found this thing called GitHub, I think it was back in like 2011, sure. I was like, what's this thing? What's this thing you can get involved in? I started getting involved in a couple of open source projects that I thought was interesting, one of which was Chocolatey. Chocolatey was my first kind of major contribution to an open source project. And now where I am today, I'm now working full time for them as a, they help pay my mortgage, I like to say. And it developed from there. But some would say I've probably got a little bit of an addiction. I'm on GitHub probably every day, doing various things across the different projects that I work on. It all kind of stemmed from that Commodore 64 that I got, where I got this thing that I didn't really know what it was, but
yeah.
My interest in technology and all things in that space kind of grew from there. Yeah,
that's awesome. I mean, it's funny how a lot of my guests kind of have a very similar, I guess, origin story, whether it's something just showed up magically, whether it's, in your situation, a computer showing up at home, or, maybe at school, somebody was introduced to a computer, or there was a computer at the library. And there's like, this is like the level of interest in, I need to understand how this thing works in and out.
Yep.
is really, really interesting. I think one of the things that you mentioned that I'd like to talk about more is, you talked about Chocolatey specifically, right? And,
yep.
Before we started streaming, you and I were talking about, how kind of you're like an open source success story, right? How one of your first contributions to open source was for Chocolatey, and that led, yep, eventually to a career using an open source technology. And, the company that, for people that don't know, is very well known in the package management space for Windows. And, like you said, you're able to financially survive working on open source, which is kind of a rarity, right?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it is. I mean, it's been an interesting journey. I mean, the reason that I picked up starting using Chocolaty at the time was we were looking for a way of doing automated installations of different applications on the machines that we were creating for what we were building. And Chocolaty was the interesting or the de facto standard at the time for that. And what I found was that there was something that it didn't do that I wanted it to do. So at that point, I was like, well, what how do I do this? Because at that point I didn't know what open source was. So I started having conversations with Rob Reynolds, the creator of Chocolaty, speaking to him over GitHub. He was like, oh, just submit a PR. And I said, like, well, what on earth is a PR? How do I do this?
Yeah, exactly.
So then I went through that process, and he and some of the other community members actually guided me through that process. So through that first PR that I did into Chocolaty, I figured out, or I got taught what an interactive rebase was, being able to do code contributions, how to style your commit messages, how to tag it to issues, all that sort of things that you do once you start getting into open source. I learned on the Chocolaty project. And around 2017, kind of we spoke about this beforehand, but around 2017, Rob Reynolds kind of started voicing the idea of, well, why don't you come and work for us? So I've got, he'd just done a Kickstarter at that point for Chocolaty, and he got lots of contribution and backers for becoming this commercial entity in terms of moving from open source into an actual product that could drive revenue for him and his employees. And he started voicing the idea of, well, just come and work for me. And at that point, yeah, I've said as much to him, so yeah. it's not a problem. But he was just some random dude from America who I'd spoken to on Twitter. I'd maybe had a couple of phone conversations with, but it's like trying to explain to your significant other, in my case, my wife, that I'm going to go and quit my job and work for this random dude from America. That wasn't an easy conversation to have, because sure. At the time, she was like, what is this thing that you're doing? Why you're on your laptop, you're doing stuff, but I don't understand what it is. How can this make money for you? So how can I had that conversation, sat down, explained to her what it was, how it works, how it could potentially help pay our mortgage. And then eventually met Rob in person. We went down to a conference in London together, and we ended up spending the week together in an Airbnb where we were sharing. It was a house, effectively, but we were in the house together. And I've kind of like to say that week was either going to be make or break. It was either going to be we were going to get on really well, and we were going to continue this effort, which was me going to work for him, or we were going to say, like, that's enough, I don't like you very much, and we're going to part ways. But it ended up being the former one. So I've been working at Chocolaty almost 4 years now, full time. The problem that I had, and I kind of do still struggle with, is prior to working for Chocolaty full time, I would kind of contribute into Chocolaty in my spare time. So I would go to work, I'd come back, I would have tea with the wife and the kids, and then I might in the evening or the weekends do some open source contributions. But then I had to switch to this mentality where I was doing that as my job.
Yeah.
So kind of switching off from doing that as your full-time day job to then not doing additional work in that space of your evenings and weekends, it was a hard balancing act, because it's like, well, where do you draw the line? Because I was in a routine at that point, you know what I mean? I was doing all this work in my spare time, and I wanted to continue doing that because work-related stuff might not be what I was really focusing on. I might have been more driven towards some of the commercial aspects of Chocolaty, and in my spare time I still wanted to do the open source stuff, but it's all still part of the entire Chocolaty ecosystem. So it's been an interesting road through that. But yeah, we've grown as a company. We've got loads more folk working for us now. So it's been interesting to see how that's been growing, and the team's been developing, and the different aspects that we've been able to work on. So it's been an exciting time. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that's some great stuff. I there's a lot I'd like to kind of follow up there. I think one of the things that you mentioned that really rings true is you went from kind of open source work as like a hobby or something that you would do, like you said, like, you know, nights and weekends or things like that. And then you had to kind of transition from, oh, this work that I was doing in my spare time, it is now my full time. So I guess the first question I need to ask is, I imagine some projects enter or replace Chocolaty, right? I don't think you probably you just completely stopped working on open source stuff, right? You just went from Chocolaty now being full-time. Oh, I have these nights and weekends now where I can find something new to play with.
Absolutely. So the other main project that I work on is a project called Cake. Now, people have pointed out that I do have a tendency to pick projects that are food related. I don't understand why that is, but sure. I have chocolatey and I have cake. And for a while there, I was working on the sake project. So it's a drink related, food related. Mm-hmm. Anyway, absolutely. So because I was able to focus my chocolatey time during my work hours, it definitely opened up the potential for other open source projects. And I'm a prolific serial contributor to various projects. The four main ones are the ones that are along the top here in my posters behind me here. But
yep.
It did open up my time to do other contributions. Yes, absolutely. But it's been interesting to see the crossover between some of the projects as well, because Cake, the build orchestration system that I work on, we're utilizing that for Chocolatey in terms of doing the build automations for its projects. And then the other is the main one that I work on that helps in terms of the versioning and generating of release notes for all those projects. So there's a nice little kind of synergy of all those projects coming together to work together to get out of them what we need. So it's been an interesting journey, definitely.
Here's a question for you. You mentioned something a bit earlier, which I thought was kind of funny. When you started working on open source stuff and, you know, the response that you got was, oh, just open a PR, right? And then you started to learn kind of the canonical phrases that come with open source, right? And all of them are very much, and this probably isn't fair for other open source technologies, but like Git has kind of synonymized itself with like open source speak and Git are very hand in hand. Like you're talking about interactive rebases and all these other, you know, complex topics that a lot of people in tech that don't work in open source or may not work with Git technology, they don't know at all. So, you know, from my experience, like my thought is, from your experience, what is the thing about Git, and I guess to a greater extent, like GitHub, that makes, I guess, open source so easy? Is it just the fact that the website is just available, or is it because there's something about the technology in general?
I think that's a big part of it. I mean, I think it's a fairly safe, it's fairly well known that the Git command line, if you just start there, your life in open source is good to start with, because there is a distinct learning curve when you're trying to learn the Git command line. So there's like two or three different ways of doing exactly the same thing at the Git command line, and you kind of have to know which one is the right one for the situation that you're currently doing. So if you remove Git and you go to some of the other GUI or GUI based tools for that, and then also using the GitHub website, it takes away a lot of the complexity of Git. But what I tend to say to folks, and I did a Hacktoberfest session a couple of weeks ago for the Scotland Hacktoberfest one, and we kind of talked through how you can get started in contributing to projects. And while I say that, I suggest that if you're using GitHub and you're using something like, I don't know, Fork or Gitkraken for doing the commits and all that sort of stuff, that's great, because it makes things really simple. But there are those cases where you need to understand what Git is doing at the root level, because some of these UI tools can't help. Because back in the early days of like GitHub Desktop, I don't know if you played with GitHub Desktop, it's a great user interface. But there was a couple of times in the earlier versions where I was doing an operation and it just came up with a big red text that said, I can't do what you're asking me to do.
Yeah.
Go to the Git command line and fix it for you. And I'm like, well, what's this Git command line? I've been using this UI tool and it's been working great for me, but now I need to understand what this Git thing is. So in terms of the tools that are coming out of GitHub specifically to make contributions easier, there's things now like GitHub.dev. It's just amazing what you can do in the GitHub.dev space for contributing to the repository. The VS Code add-in for GitHub pull requests is just amazing. If you've played with it, I don't know, the GitHub code spaces, some really cool stuff happening in the GitHub code spaces land. So the ability to contribute to an open source project has become so much easier than where it was when I started. Because like I say, when I started that first PR, it was a community member called Rich Siegel was talking me through, literally in a GitHub issue. He was like, do this, do this, do this, do this. And I genuinely thought the guy was mad, because he was trying, he was telling me to do the you have to pick up these commits and move them onto the head of the branch and all that sort of stuff. It's like, there's no way this is going to work. But that aha moment that I had when I did that first interactive rebase, it's like, okay, now I know what he's talking about. Now I can move forward with this. But for most folks, you don't need to see that on a day-to-day basis, because your contribution to an open source project might be as simple as create an issue, open a PR, and that gets merged then straight away. The contribution is really, really simple. Weeds in terms of someone's asked for changes and you need to make a modification, and they've got kind of specific rules about how they want their commits and their messages to look that you might want to do an interactive rebase. But there is definitely a learning curve when you start getting into that space. But a simple PR, you can do that so easily now through the GitHub user interface. It's really quite scary how easy it is now.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how... You know, as technologists, like, we very much like to get very technical very quickly. We like to hack into things. But like, if there's a tool that solves our problem, we're going to use that tool every single time. Like you mentioned, like GitHub Desktop, right? When they're like, to your point, if there's things that I can't do in GitHub Desktop for whatever reason, like I just get angry. It's like, now I have to use the command line. You mentioned something like the GitHub website just getting better and better too. Like, I think these are some of the things that, you know, these products or these tools or these companies are very synonymous with open source, because they've kind of taken some of these technologies that exist that champion open source and make them consumable in a way that's easier for people and with lower barrier to entry, right? Like, like not needing like a machine with like, you know, 600 gigs of RAM and like a 400 core processor. Like, you know, it's really, really nice to be able to do some of these things in a browser or on a phone or what have you, right? Not saying that you should be doing anything Git related on your phone, but unfortunately that does happen sometimes where you need to maybe review a PR or something. I think one thing that's kind of interesting too, and I you know, for folks that don't know, I know Gary fairly well. We've talked in the past. And I think one of the things that I just kind of clicked in my head and is, so we have Chocolaty, which is very much like has a large build automation piece to it, because eventually you have to ship like distributed files for people to actually be able to install. And then you have Cake, which is very much like a build utility, right? What do you like so much about building stuff?
It's an interesting question. I mean, the I've kind of always kind of stuck to, and it's one that I kind of want folks that's kind of working on my team or working alongside me, is if you have to do something more than once, you need to automate it, right? There's little to no point in just you kind of plodding away and hitting the keys and clicking the mouse. If you can automate that, then you should. So where I kind of started was, we were at the time, I was working for a company that were doing this reasonably big bit of software, and there was no automation around it. They might have had that did a few things, but ultimately what I wanted to get to was I wanted to be able to take this thing and have it deployed over here when we made a commit, and everything installed, everything configured, ready to be tested by the people that were testing it. So we went through this kind of gargantuan cycle of, okay, let's get the build process working. Okay, now that we've got the build working, how do we take this VM and put the bits on it that we need in order for it to run? So that's kind of where Chocolaty came in at the time, because Chocolaty was able to install the applications that I needed to run this bit of software. And then once we were able to do that, we then obviously were spinning up VMs in the background, so there was some automation around that. So no, I just kind of love the building blocks that you can put into place to go from essentially that mundane task of going next, to have something that you click a button and it's done. So the process that I typically walk through in a lot of stuff that we do is, okay, let's document everything that we need to go from here to here. And once you've got that on a bit of paper or an electronically somewhere, the way that we tend to do certain things is like a checklist item. So whether it's in Confluence or GitHub or whatever it is, document exactly what you need to do and then start chipping away. Well, I can automate that, or I can do this and I can do this. And eventually you get to that kind of one click deployment or one click publishing of what it is you're building. But the important thing for me there is the initial documentation of it, because if it's just something that's in my on the team's head, if that process isn't known within the team, then it's not known anywhere. So you need to document it first. So you don't have to go from zero to automated deployments 27 times a day. As long as you can go from to document the entire process that you need to follow, then over time you can chip away and say, okay, I can automate that. And then slowly it becomes known within the team how things are done, and then everyone's better off for it then.
Yeah, I mean, just as somebody who has used Chocolaty, like I have an app that I use Chocolaty to publish through, like so people can install this open source project they have called PresenceLet using Chocolaty. Like in my head, the stuff that needs to take place just to ensure that it's going to run Windows, right? It runs on my machine, right? But just because it runs on my machine doesn't mean that it's going to run on every person's Windows 10 or Windows 11 machine that exists, right? So like the hoops that Chocolaty makes go away is super impactful, right? Like I use the Chocolaty API, I upload my stuff to it, and then I get an email notification saying it passed these tests, and then I don't do anything else. I just have to make sure that I don't get a message from somebody saying that it failed. And, you know, within a day or 2 days, it's available for download and install, right? And as somebody who has tried to make the delivery of my stuff easier for folks, like Chocolaty just makes things really easy, right? Like I know there's other package managers out there that exist for Windows, but the thing that I love about Chocolaty as well is that it seems to me like there's just this strong community of users that, you know, it seems like whether they're giving back by contributing to Chocolaty or they're trying to make the overall process better, you know, it's for the good. Like, what has your experience been like working with, now that you're not the Chocolaty community anymore, you're a Chocolaty employee, like what has your experience been working with the Chocolaty community on kind of making these things less friction, or frictionless, I guess you could say?
I mean, it's definitely been great, to be honest. I mean, the community and to a wider extent the Kit community have been great. I mean, I can genuinely say that I've made friends through this. Yeah. The most recently, or not obviously since the pandemic, but we had a get together of a bunch of Chocolaty community members at the WinOps conference in 2018, I think it was. So it was great to finally meet some of these folks in person. So it's been great to go from I've just known these people, again, in the same way that I met with Rob. I've only known these people on GitHub or Twitter. So it's been great to meet them in person and kind of get to know them and what they're doing and why they like to contribute to Chocolaty. So it's been an interesting journey to go from, as you say, community member making contributions to the person on the other side of the fence saying, having to maybe sometimes make the hard decision to say, well, actually we're not doing that because of reasons, and then you need to handle that sort of thing. But no, definitely there's what you described there in terms of the taking PresenceLite and pushing it through Chocolaty community website and having all the automation that happens for package validation, package verifier, package scanner, and to know that what being delivered is something that will work and can be trusted. There's been huge community involvement in a lot of that. So for instance, Maurice Kevinar has done a bunch of work on the package validator in terms of making sure that the rules that we're putting in there in terms of validating that the PowerShell is right, that we're not going to do like a format C colon within the package, because that would just be terrible in the user experience, that sort of stuff. A package validator. So Maurice contributed a lot to that. We've got other community members who are doing a lot of work. Even as early as last night, I was reviewing a bunch of PRs for Chocolaty Open Source. There's a community member known as the cake is a lie is his handle. He's doing a bunch of work recently in terms of Chocolaty work on Linux. And you're like, well, why would you want chocolatey a Windows package manager to work on Linux.
Yeah.
But it's for his workflow, it absolutely makes sense, because in his workflow, he uses Linux as his daily driver, but he also maintains and contributes to Windows packages. Mm-hmm. So he wants the Choco Pack and the Choco Push on his machine. So he's found all of those wonderful edge cases where in the chocolatey code base, we're using a backslash when we should be using a forward slash,
yeah, because
then it doesn't work on Linux. So he's been kind of meticulously going through all of that and fixing all of those kind of Linux-based issues. And I've been open source maintainer's point of view just to let him run with it and obviously review the PRs and make sure that they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to let him run with that and to kind of take ownership of that, because that's a space that I'll put my hands up. I'm not a Linux person. I've been Windows from day one. I mean, I know enough Linux to be dangerous, whereas he is more than capable of doing that. So I'm happy to take on the reins of that and let him run with it and build up that area of the community. But yeah, the chocolate community is a great building. There's obviously the dark side of it. There's always those areas that you get into when folks don't like your decisions that you've been made, or there's been some friction. But I mean, that's par for the course. I mean, all these things about open source, it is a great community. It's a great thing to be involved in. But there are those negative areas that happen as well from time to time. But we live, we learn, we grow, and we get on with it. So it's But it's also part. What I can say from that is that I personally have been involved in a few disputes where I've come back and I've learned from those, so I won't make those same mistakes in the future as well. So it's you have to learn from those experiences and grow. So
I mean, that's a super insightful comment, right? Like, there's a lot of things there. One, like taking something that is, I guess, canonical with Windows, like file paths and things like that, and just trying to be more accessible for folks that might want to use it in Linux, right? I'm not saying that like Chocolatey should be used over like apt-get or Scoop or anything, or like these other tools, but like it's just giving people more options, right? And then the thing you said about community like really resonates with me, right? Like, I think a community in general, like, you're going to get a lot of passionate people on every side of a decision. And I think where community is great, especially community around open source, is that, yeah, sure, there might be loud people like with their two cents, but I think in general, like, the community like generally accepts decisions, especially like decisions that are really thought out. Like, if you make decisions that aren't very thought out, like, the community will respond to it, and then you have to pivot. I think one thing that I really appreciate about Chocolatey is that it seems like, you know, if you go to the website, if you go look at some of the GitHub repos, like, everything is very in the open. Like, there's not a ton of stuff that just exists like in some meeting somewhere, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, we're going to remove this feature, we're going to add this feature that makes things harder for other people. Because at the end of the day, like, your consumers are like the users of your tool, and they're also customers, right? So it's like, kind of everybody shares like the same, I guess, vested interest in making sure Chocolatey gets used as many people. Because if you ship packages using Chocolatey, and then all of a sudden, like, the Chocolatey community no longer uses Chocolatey, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of truth to that. And the where I see things like that, to me, Chocolatey, the open source Chocolatey, is obviously the foundational aspect of what is Chocolatey Software Inc. So if we didn't have that open source project, we wouldn't have the commercial arm that, again, pays my mortgage. So we can't disrespect those community members. We can't abandon that community open source effort, because that is the building block for what is Chocolatey Central Management and Chocolatey aspects that go along with that. So there's always going to be work in the open source area that helps what we can do as the commercial side of things. So yeah, absolutely, we can't annoy folks because they are our customers, as you say. So if anything, what we've seen in Chocolatey is that sometimes things go the other way. So there's definitely some of the commercial features that were the the cornerstone of that first kind of commercial version of Chocolaty, there's been discussions about potentially moving them back down into open source, because we're at the point now where those are not the core features anymore, and we can start to say, well, we can just take them into the open source area rather than still being a commercial aspect. So it's very much the other way that we're looking to go to. But it's a big area. There's lots of interest in automating all things in Chocolaty, on Windows rather, and Chocolaty, as you say, is one of the package managers that are out there. But we do like to think we've got a wide cross-section of functionality that some other package managers don't have. So the ability to install pretty much anything on Windows, so whether it's an exe, an MSI, whether it's a zip file, whether it's a registry file, whether it's just a random PowerShell script that you want to deploy into your machine, you can maintain and know on that machine that that's what's installed. It's a fascinating area to work in. It really has been. I've learned a lot being part of this community, and then ultimately as part of the company that's driving it as well.
That's one really interesting thing to consider, right? It's not just about installation, right? So Chocolaty kind of, it gives you the opportunity to just have a better way to manage things, right? You know, like you said, whether it's like, oh, I need to update the registry for this particular thing, or I need to run a PowerShell script. Like, it's about better management of utilities, right? Whether those utilities have a UI or not. I think in general, a lot of people think of package managers, they think immediately like, okay, like there's existing package managers that are built by Microsoft or other companies. And it's really, really important to call out that like Chocolaty just isn't about installing software. It's about just enabling different workflows, right? Which I think is really insightful. Also, just in general, like I've noticed that the Chocolaty community is like very, very passionate. Like if I have a question and if I am on Twitter and then I at like the Chocolaty handle, like there's always like three or four people that just show up magically and like will try to help me, whether it's through DMs or like they'll get on a chat with me, and like they want to make sure that there's like going back to this like low barrier to entry, right? Like even in when I'm running into edge cases, they very much want to make sure that there's no edge cases either, which is a challenging feat with software. To go back to kind of your origin with Chocolaty, were you like, do you remember what employee number you were? Were you one of the first people, like one of the first engineers that were brought on?
So I was brought on as the first developer on the team after Rob. So I was technically, I think I was employee number 4 or 5.
Okay.
I was very much early doors. So I mean, I've always tended to work for small companies. I like the idea of being able to do something in. See that something happening, as opposed to just being the small cog in the big machine. So when one of the small companies I worked for got bought over and it got amalgamated into this big massive company, I didn't like it as much because I didn't feel I was but to be brought in as literally one step away from the boss, that was an interesting dynamic because I'd never been in that situation before. We're much bigger now than we were there, but it was literally me and the boss, and I was able to make the decisions or help make the decisions that drove some of the first commercial aspects of Chocolaty. So it was definitely an interesting time there.
One thing that I think is interesting too, and I don't know about your previous employer, whether or not it was a distributed team or not, but Chocolaty very much is distributed, right? Like you work wherever you want, whatever. So what was that experience like when you, like your day job immediately became like, oh, like I just work from home like forever now, or as long as I want to kind of hang out with Chocolaty?
So let me come back to that. The one of the first things that I had to get over was at the time when I started working with Chocolaty, my wife was pretty much in the house all day with our second child. Mm-hmm. And what she made clear from day one is you can't be in the house. right? Because I've got my own routine. This is her saying this. I've got my own routine. I know how the kids work. I know where they need to be. If you come in and be in the house, you're just going to make it a mess. And she's absolutely right, because that's absolutely what would happen. So where I'm sitting now is what we actually ended up doing is we converted part of our garage into an office space. So I can say I've technically got a commute to work.
Yeah,
it's literally out the back door. It's 10 steps into the garage, and this is my commute. But I think if I didn't have that, so I, when I go over to that door, there is that kind of mental disconnect. I think that does help, because I'm not just sitting in a room in the house and walking out the door and then I'm immediately dad anymore. I do technically have a commute back to the house, so I've got a time to kind of brush things off, go into the house and be ready for what they've got involved what in store for me. But having that ability to have that disconnect is definitely helpful. But that first step of working from home by myself with no one to talk to, it was hard, because you go from that office space where you're having banter with your fellow employees, you might go out for lunch with a bunch of people. None of that happens in a remote, I mean, it can happen, but obviously with the pandemic we've all had for the last 2 years, no one's went anywhere really. So it has been just sitting at my computer doing my work. So it has been a learning curve, but I mean, I've made a point of getting away from the desk, going for a walk at lunchtime. Yeah. That's kind of my routine. But in terms of the distributed teams, Chocolate is probably the most distributed team I've ever worked in. One of the companies I used to work for, I'm based in the UK. One of the companies was based in Canada. So I've kind of always had that kind of working in different time zones aspect to it. But with Chocolatey, we've got folks in here. We've got folks in East Coast, West Coast, New Zealand. We've kind of got wide time zones disparities. So there is that kind of golden zone where there's that 1 hour or 2 hour where everyone is available. Yeah. But then obviously that's crammed full of meetings, because that's where everyone is available. But that's where things like distributed communication channels, the likes of Slack, the likes of Discord, GitHub as well, obviously, reviewing PRs, contributing to issues, all that sort of stuff, that helps in that regard. But there's nothing better than kind of sitting down and getting a Zoom call and having a bit of banter with folks over an open session. But it definitely was a step change. But having said all of that, I don't think I would want to go back to an office job anymore. I don't think I could go back to a full-time office job. I think I would struggle. So it's an interesting balance.
It's funny because when I changed jobs at Microsoft, I went from being a remote employee to in office. And initially it was really exciting. Little did I know when I started my job in November of 2019 that in 6 months nobody would ever work from an office again, right? That 6 months, it was really eye-opening for me about how much like you have to be on in an office. Right. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean, like, there's always this perception, and I think it's not fair, but when you work in a distributed manner for a company that doesn't really understand distributed teams, there's always this, okay, what are you doing? And, you know, the people being in the office was a way to kind of check to make sure that people were getting their job done and hitting their milestones and things like that, good, better, and different. And I think what's interesting, since the pandemic, and now obviously I work for a company that's distributed, like, there's a responsibility for everybody to just trust one another. And I think that's what's really interesting, right? Like, we're all adults. If you don't get your work done, it's going to show very, very quickly. And one of the things that I think is really, really interesting about companies that have decided to go distributed is, okay, like, now we have all these opportunities to find more innovative ways when we are able to get together, right? And obviously during the pandemic, that's kind of hard. But I imagine after the pandemic, a lot of companies just have decided, look, you don't need to go to an office anymore. So it's going to be interesting once things start to calm down in some countries, the States or the UK, your countries in the UK. Like, how are we going to be able to get back to that sense of like, oh, we can see each other in person occasionally? Like, I know my company is like planning like this big event where everybody from the entire company goes into one spot. But it's one of those things where I'd love to get your thoughts on how do we kind of maintain that semblance that you get in the office of that, you know, that water cooler conversations, the community that's in the office. How do you manage that with Chocolatey and with the distributed team?
I mean, it's one of these situations. I don't think there's any simple answer. I think we've gone through a process where we've tried a few things, and some things have worked, some things have haven't. But we do, for us, we do obviously a daily stand-up, but it's more than just the stand-up as well. That is our opportunity to see everybody in the team at the same time. So it's great from a getting to know each other point of view, especially when there's new folks coming on, it's their opportunity to get involved in that team. But what we've also tried to a lesser extent, we're either not doing it right or we need to figure out how to do it properly. But there is this concept of just kind of an open, whether it's an open Zoom meeting, whether it's an open audio channel in Discord, it's literally just a drop-in. So it's almost like a pairing session or a mob programming session where you're just in the room and you're still maybe doing your own work, but you've got the opportunity to shout over virtually to a colleague to say, oh, how do you do this again? So rather than just sitting here and cursing and swearing at myself and slowly going mad, the idea is that you could just shout over to someone in that audio room or in that Zoom saying, oh, how do you do this again? And it's just that building that camaraderie. But like I say, we haven't been particularly good at that, but I think that's more from we haven't been telling people that want to do it, so it's never kind of kicked off. But there has been that idea within the team of having that open area where it's not mandated. You don't have to go, but it's if you want to chill out, you want to hang out with some folks, to have a bit of banter, then that's the kind of idea that I think has got some legs to it. But obviously, the in-person, there's no substitute for the in-person stuff. Before the pandemic hit, we as Chocolatey decided, well, so in 2018, we had our own conference. So we had Chocolatey Fest in 2018, where we brought a bunch of folks together, had a bunch of talks on Chocolatey and told people about everything and what it can do. But the following year, we kind of flipped that on its head and we went to other conferences, but sponsored as Chocolatey. Yeah. So that we went through and it was like 6 or 7 events. So I was in the States a lot in that year. But that was the opportunity for us to get together with the team in person, hang out together, get to know each other. Obviously, I do miss that aspect to it.
Sure.
But I genuinely don't miss the travel aspect to it.
No.
I had the opportunity just in the last couple of months to go down to the WinOps conference again down in London, and some of my colleagues went, but I was like, I don't want to go. I don't know if I've now become a hermit who never goes anywhere, but sure. I didn't feel ready to go on a plane and travel somewhere and be around people. But I guess that will change, but it'll take some time, I think, to readjust. So,
yeah, I mean, it's so funny how, and I'm kind of the same way. Like, I've done some travel too. It's not that I didn't enjoy it, but it just feels very strange. It's very interesting, like, how quickly we get into our states of like, I don't want to do anything else other than this, right? And I think one of the things of the pandemic, especially for people who work in tech, who have had the flexibility to, you know, work from home, is that like this, why would I ever leave my office? Like, you know, I have a good setup. And if you do have a good setup, and this is just speaking for me, because I have a little bit of privilege, unfortunately, in this space, but like, I have this good setup, I have a good computer, I have all of the accoutrements to be able to do things like live streams and all that sort of stuff. And like, why would I ever want to like not have this and have to do work or do anything, right? So even like going to a conference, like I'm speaking at a conference in December in this in Las Vegas, like I'm going there, and my immediate thought is like, well, like, how am I going to be able to do my demos without my like desktop? Like, I have to like figure out how to like get it all to work on a laptop, and like, okay, is this actually going to work? Make sure all my demos work on this laptop. And it's like, and I literally am thinking like, maybe I just remote into my machine and then do a demo from there. And like, that's so funny, because instead of me trying to adapt to having to work somewhere else, like, no, I'm just going to do the exact same thing just from a different location. And, you know, I'd imagine a lot of the stuff that you do, like, you have like very specific hardware requirements, right? Like, you can't just go and pick up like a laptop from the store with like, you know, 16 gigs of RAM and it just works magically, right? Like, you need something a bit more powerful. So kind of how has your mindset changed now that, you know, you work from home, you can kind of customize, like you'd mentioned a little bit earlier about your office and things like that. Like this idea of nesting, like if you feel like that you've properly nested in the last 4 years or so.
Definitely. I mean, there's like I say, that first 6 months were hard, but once you got through that, I mean, it's a step change. I mean, I would struggle to go back into an office environment, but there's a couple of aspects to that is that there's a freedom that comes from working remotely. Now, there obviously, as you kind of mentioned, there's the aspect of, oh, I need to be seen to be doing things because I'm not in the office. But I mean, that from my point of view, as long as you're getting your work done, you're not going to be held, or I've certainly not experienced, you're not going to be held to a specific rota of you have to be at your desk at this time in order to get things done. There's a lot more freedom that comes from remote work, to the extent that I've been able to go and pick the kids up from school or drop them off from nursery, that sort of stuff. There's a lot of freedom that comes with that ultimately I wouldn't get in an office environment. And I'm kind of lucky in the sense that Rob has got two young kids as well, so he kind of knows how things work in terms of there's some days you just have to get stuff done. So there's a lot of stuff that comes with that. But in terms of nesting and having my own setup here, it would be, like I say, I've now got the sit stand desk, so I can be sitting, I can be standing. I've got the double screens, I've got green screens for when I do the Twitch streaming that I do, I've got the lights. It would be hard pushed to kind of step away from this, and as you say, in a conference example, that's something I do, as or I did as well, conference speaking. Obviously not done anything in the last couple of years, but that side of stuff is something I would like to get back to. But there is a comfort element of I've got everything here. Now I haven't transitioned into a desktop machine. The majority of my work is still done off of my Mac that I have here, but then you might think, why is someone who does a Windows Package Manager, why is they running a Mac? But the reason there is that we wanted to be able to ultimately, Chocolatey has always been an application that will run cross-platform. It's predominantly, it is a Windows Package Manager, but we've always wanted it to be able to build and compile, etc., on other operating systems. And the Mac is the one kind of bit of hardware that will give you the ability to do Mac, Windows, and Linux. So that's kind of why that became the hardware. But I can say that I've been privileged in the sense that I've got the high-end version of the Mac, so it does everything that you could possibly want it to do, including sounding like it's going to take off when the fans kick in. But that's just par for the course. From that aspect, I could literally just pick up the laptop and be I could do work elsewhere, but then you lose, as you say, the first world problems of not having the dual 4K monitors and the lights and all that sort of stuff. But I could technically be proficient elsewhere. And one of my colleagues, he does do that. I mean, he makes a point of going out into a coffee shop. So he spends his morning in a coffee shop. So he's just got his own, he's got the laptop as well. He goes there. He has that mentality that he kind of does want to get away from the desk for a little bit, but he can still do all the work that he needs to do because of the industry that we work in. We're not tied to, you need to clock in and you need to do this, and there's this bit of machinery that you need to operate and all that sort of stuff. As long as I've got an internet connection and a keyboard, I can do the work that I need to do. So we're very lucky and very privileged in that sense to be able to do that. So,
but don't lie and say going from like 50 inches of screen to like 13 inches is enjoyable. Don't ever say that.
There's definitely that aspect to it. And obviously with getting old as well, the amount of pixels that you can actually see without having to make it blow up is slowly diminishing. But no, there's definitely it's a step change, let's put it that way. Yes, because the way, I don't know how you run your setup, but I have Visual Studio on one side and I've got all the stuff open on another one. I've probably got too many pixels. Let's put it that way. I wouldn't change it.
I think so. I'm a bit extra. Like, so I had two monitors for a long time, and then I got a third monitor. And when it came in the mail, my wife said, "Did one of the monitors break?" And I said, "No, I'm just getting another monitor." And she said, "Why?" And to be fair, like, I work in marketing, so I'm not an engineer. I mean, I'm pretty technical, but like, I don't need like all of this to be able to do my work. Like, I'm in Google Docs all day, I'm in Slack all day. But I think how my brain works is I need separate context for each thing. So over here on this monitor, I have email and calendar. Over on this one, I have Slack. And then in the middle, I have like kind of my predominant like working area where I have browsers open or whatever, right? And that's just the way that I work, being able to separate things out. So like when I see people that have like the huge, like, you know, 40-inch single screens, my brain doesn't really work that well. Like, I know that you can split things up into individual segments, but I'm just like, but like there's everything has borders, like with monitors, and it's great. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I have all this set up too. Like, I do the greens. I'd love to talk to you about your live stream, which I think is great. Like, green screens and lights and stream decks and all this sort of stuff that like 5 years ago, people were like, no, you don't need that to like be successful in tech. But now a friend of mine the other day was talking about how like the pandemic has introduced like this whole concept of like, oh, you have to be like, you have to have like a production, like you need, like, especially like, you know, with live streaming or, you know, if you're doing anything that involves like your camera being on, you want to make sure you look good or make sure that, you know, you're getting the highest fidelity bits out there. So, you know, since you do a live stream, and I'd be curious to know, like, you know, when you initially started doing it, like, obviously, I think to be able to do live streams, you have to do it for yourself first, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to do it for an audience, you're going to be very disappointed when like three people watch your stream. but like, so what is it about live streaming that you find so interesting and captivating to, you know, communicate with the audience a different way?
So for me, the reason it started, it was a purely selfish endeavor, and I'll be open to that. So what I ended up doing is I made an agreement with my wife, my significant other, and I said, look, on a Monday night, I want a dedicated time slot where I can do stuff.
Sure. Right?
She's not a technical person, so what I'm on my computer, she doesn't know what I'm doing. But I said to her, like, I wanted a dedicated time slot to do stuff. So at that point, she would agree that she would have the kids, she would look after the cat, and now obviously we've got a dog, and then I would have another evening and another day. She gets her dedicated time slot, but I'm doing all the stuff that she does. So from that perspective, it was an opportunity for me to say, look, I want to do stuff of an evening. And I want to try and put stuff out there that folks can help out with. So from a selfish perspective, I was getting folks coming on the stream, and I still am, who know more about the thing that I'm trying to do than I do.
Oh, sure.
So I'm kind of putting myself out there as the person of, I want to achieve this thing, but I need some help. So it is hard through the text-based interactions that you get with Twitch, because there is a kind of a lag sometimes between someone saying something and you're trying to do it on the stream. But I kind of put myself out there as a, come here and teach me stuff. But at the same time, I hope I'm providing some benefit in terms of, well, everything doesn't always work the first time, the right time, every time. There is this annoying learning curve that you have to go through with things, but I'm hoping that I can show that I can do these things. So a recent example is I was building this little, it's a silly little website for me and the kids, but we've got, during the pandemic, we've been making the most of trying to do going to visit places that are around us rather than doing the big holidays. We've been going and see, there's pretty much where I am, you can't go anywhere without looking at a castle. There's so many castles in my area.
That's awesome.
We've been going out as a family and doing selfies at the castle and going around and visiting all this thing. So I wanted to capture all of those in a website. So it's a silly little website, but I needed to interact with the Google API so I could put pins on a map to say that these are the ones that we've been to. I needed to be able to put this onto upload photos of the selfies and then have the descriptions. So we spent like 3 or 4 weeks across the 2-hour segment on a Monday night just building this out. Now, it's not finished, but functionally it's all there. It looks terrible because I'm not an HTML CSS person, but functionally it's all there. I can upload photos, I can put drop pins on the Google map, but I wouldn't have been able to, I would have been able to figure those things out, but putting it on stream and doing it in an interactive way, just it's a great dynamic. And I'm lucky in the sense that there's a I have a couple of people who come on stream pretty much all the time. They are my friends now. Again, some of them I've never met in person, but we get involved, we have a chat, we have a bit of banter, and it's a great opportunity to learn stuff from my point of view. But there is that production aspect to it, and you're right, because when I first started doing some of this stuff, I was trying to make YouTube videos, and I found that hard because with a YouTube video, there's kind of an expectation that it needs to be polished, it all needs to be look nice, it looks to me pretty, and all that sort of stuff. Whereas with a stream, it's more, it's live, it's interactive, things are expected to not be perfect. Sure. But what you can do with the likes of OBS or Streamlabs OBS, you can get a fairly good quality thing without doing too much.
Yep.
But at least with the stream, you don't have the after work that goes with tweaking this and making sure the audio quality is good and snipping out this thing that was said that wasn't meant to be said, all that sort of stuff. I just don't have the time to do that.
Sure.
At least with a stream, it's once it's done, it's done. That to me was an appealing aspect to it. But it's been fun. I mean, I've been doing it for a few years now. I try to do it regularly on a Monday night. And as you say, I mean, it's not every day that there's hundreds of people or anything like that. Silly. My numbers are quite small, but I kind of like that as well because I'm not out to make money off of it. It's me having that dedicated 2 hours of a Monday evening to get stuff that I want to get done, and I just happen to be sitting here talking to people and interacting with a few folks to get it done. And it's been great fun actually.
Yeah, I'm in it for the same thing, right? Like, I think it also doesn't help when you know people or you're friends with people that are very good at making YouTube videos, right?
Yeah.
It's like you look at it and it's like, oh, they have like 100,000 subscribers, like every one of their, and then immediately it's like, oh, like I could never get there. But like with stream, at least how I see it, like this is very much for me. I love having conversation with people about tech and open source because it's something that I have an interest in. And, you know, the hour flies by, right? Like you have the conversation and it's just great. And then at the end of it, I make sure the audio levels aren't terrible. And I take the audio and make it a podcast just if people want to listen to it while they're out walking their dog or whatever. And at the end of the day, like it just allows me to have a hobby that stretches my mind a little bit, but like I am never going to learn Adobe Premiere very well. I'm never going to learn like Audacity very well. Like I know enough like you said about like Git, I know, or about Linux. I know just enough about Linux to get in trouble. I know just enough about Premiere to take 7 weeks to do something that should take 15 minutes. So, and I think what I love about watching people like live stream like you or like one of our friends, Jeff Fritz, like these people that do streams, like I kind of watch it for the authenticity. Like if somebody spends like 10, 15 minutes like trying to figure out like why something won't build, like I enjoy that because like, oh, like this isn't polished. This isn't something that somebody spent like 3 hours working on to like make 15 minutes look good. So there's that authenticity, which I really, really appreciate. And you also feel that a little bit like you feel the pain with the person, right? Like I was on a live stream one time with somebody and something just wasn't working. And we spent like 45 minutes trying to figure out why it wasn't working. And I could just feel like the agony, like in the people watching, like, oh, this is the worst. I've been there. But like the audience, like I think the audience connects with you better when they see people struggle.
Absolutely.
Like nobody wants to. Nobody wants to like be perfect constantly, and the people that do want to be perfect constantly, I find uninteresting, if that's fair.
There's definitely some truth to that. I mean, nothing ever goes the way you want it to. I mean, you start down a path of, oh, I'm just going to do this one thing, and then something happens, and it turns out that you spent the whole stream literally figuring out this one issue, but that's fine. Yeah. I mean, it's like I say, it's not this scripted thing. It's not we have to get to this point. I mean, I finished a stream early the other week because I thought this thing was going to take ages, but we got through it so quickly that normally I have a 2-hour slot. I'm like, well, I'm not going to start something else now because I've just finished this one thing that I thought was going to take the whole evening. But yeah, I finished it early because it's like, that was a good day because it all worked. It all did go the way I wanted it to go. But the other one, on the flip side of that, I've then done multiple streams back to back to get that one thing done because we couldn't get it to work the way we wanted it to. So it's both sides of the same coin.
You should be a PM because like that's like the number one skill of being a PM is not starting like new work, right? Like that, I mean, how many times have we all been very guilty of like, oh, I'll just start on this thing. And then like you spend way too much time trying to set that up, right? Like, so I mean,
absolutely.
And that, I think that kind of ties into everything too about like you have to have, like when you're working from home, distributed team, time zones, like you need to be very effective and efficient in like managing your time, because like, you know, you got kids, you got pets, you have a spouse that might want to spend time with you. And if you don't manage your time properly, you run into the situation where there's all this, you know, built up resentment, like, oh, you're on the computer again, or oh, like, oh, Monday, I'm not going to see you tonight, or and stuff like that, right? And that's just not cool, because like, even though this is like our hobby, like we're not in it to like replace like our like life. So I think it's one of those things that being very effective in time management is important. And, you know, with that, you know, we're at time. And I think
I see that, yeah.
It's crazy. Happens every time, an hour.
Yep.
So, you know, first off, Gary, I want to thank you so much for hopping on and accommodating a US time zone again, probably for the 400th time today. And chatting with me about, you know, all sorts of interesting, you know, things in tech and open source. I really appreciated it. One of the things I love to ask my guests when we wrap up is if you can think of like tech or open source or the community that's around it in one word, what would that word be to you?
Oh, for me, a lot of it comes down to friendship. I mean, I can genuinely say that I've made lifetime friends. I've got folks that I've, like I said, some folks I've only ever met on Twitter or on Gitter, GitHub, but I've been fortunate to be able to meet them in person as well. So yeah, there's a great camaraderie in open source, and like I say, there is that learning curve, there is that dark side to it, but I can openly say and genuinely say that I've made lots of great friends. I've learned I was going to say a naughty word there. I've learned a lot through being an open source contributor, and that's only going to continue because technology keeps evolving. You can't keep up to everything by yourself, but having that community, having those friendships, having those folks that know more about things that you do, and being able to tap into them, it's a great resource. So yeah, friendship for me is one of the biggest parts of all of this. I've been very fortunate in the people I've been able to meet and to work with.
That's awesome. I mean, I feel the same way. Like, the people that you meet in tech, like, some of them are just really cool people. And it's like, without tech, you wouldn't have even had the opportunity to meet those people. Like, you know, it's great the empowerment that you get from meeting people online that have shared interests in tech. Like, I think it's great. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Definitely. So, you know, as we close, Gary, I want to thank you again for coming on the show and chatting with me. For everybody watching this, you can follow Gary on Twitter, you know, GEP13. He has a stream and all that, and I'll post that in the podcast and the live stream on demand as well for you to follow him. So for everybody tuning in, thank you so much. We'll see you next time on Coffee and Open Source. Enjoy the rest of your day, everybody.
All right.